This one is called Self-Portrait with Circus. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Back there, Self-Portrait with Circus. So, and it's really about, you know, not about circuses. It's really about other things like metaphysics and all. I'm just going on and on about the. It's a parody. I'm making a parody of my former self. Then I said, Marie, don't even change. Let's just go and get some dinner over at Romero's. What about Eddie, she said in a voice I didn't quite appreciate. Are we just going to leave him here? I myself had nothing much against Eddie. Eddie, the bitter midget. He brought along black clouds wherever he went, except when he was anywhere near Marie or some other good-looking woman. Then the sun came out and he smiled like an infant greedy for milk. Then let's not leave him, I said in the most agreeable way I could muster. I can't go like this, she said. I have to shower and change. Sure, if you have to, but I think you look grand the way you are. She was still in her acrobatic tights with a fluffy tutu, like her ballet, pink like her ballet shoes. She was beautiful and fearless on the wire, walked it as if in a dream, but that's not why I loved her. You're sweet, Louis, she said, always trying to make me feel good. Look, do whatever makes you happy, Marie. Shower and change, and I'll close down for the night. Don't forget to ask Eddie to join us, she said. If I run into him, I said. Promise? Here's the thing, I said. If everyone sees us going off with Eddie, they're going to be upset that we don't ask them. We're going to be stuck with the whole show, even the elephants, and you know how jealous they get. Those elephants, she laughed. The strong man came in the trailer door without even knocking. I had told him 105 times that he had to knock before entering. Never mind that I was his boss. He did not care what I said or wanted because he was the strong man and they were not easily replaced. Few want to be strong men in the circus today. They'd rather become wrestlers or bouncers or whatever makes more money and gives more prestige. In my time, being in the circus was a big thing, and you ran away from home to become either a sailor or a circus man, not some guy who phonies up a wrestle or stands in front of a club showing his muscles and thick neck. Hola, Marie, he said without looking at me. Oh, hello, Mario, she said with a little stumble in her voice. He nodded over my way and then followed up with a big fat smile meant for Marie. We're just leaving, I said in my most managerial way. He showed me his teeth. I made a reservation at Romero's, just me and you, he said to Marie. They don't take reservations, she said. They do for me, anytime. I hope, I said, they will honor a table for one. Or maybe it's not too late for you to invite Marlene. She's nice, that Marlene, Maria said, and she has a big crush on you. He took Marie's hand. Let's go, he said. We can work out the particulars later. Marie has plans tonight, and they do not include you, Mario, I said. He turned to me and puffed himself up. I was talking to the lady, he said. Are you a lady? He put his face right close to mine, showing me the black hair in his nostrils. Cut it out, boys, Marie said, and maybe you should get out of my trailer also. She had taken off her shoes and hose, her foot arched high. I had called her feet the Pillars of Hercules, so sturdy they were, but with thin, aristocratic ankles to match the rest of her high quality. She laughed when I told her that once, but a nice laugh because she was really pleased. She once said to me, pointing to the muscles of her arms, you don't have much here, and then bringing a finger to her head, but you got a lot up there. In fact, she continued, now the both of you just leave. She trailed that with, please. And what you do about dinner, Maria, you gotta eat. True, I said, finding a common ground with the muscle man. Nothing personal, she said, but I'll stay in with a can of soup and catch up on my magazines. She had cozied up her trailer with posters of our tours, so it looked like a comfortable old suitcase from the days when you went across America on trains and took steamers to China. She had built a little kitchen with a hot plate and a fridge that could hold milk for coffee and some Kaiser rolls. I could have stayed in that trailer with her all my life. That's great, Mario said. Open a can for me, too. We can relax and I'll read to you. I'm a great reader. That was enough, I thought. I'd have to get him off her even if I was to take a beating. Get up, Mario, I said, and take your barbells with you. You're fired. He laughed. Sure, but first make me leave, Four Eyes. He flexed his muscles. Pathetic, I thought, and cheap, too, like the black shoes without laces he was wearing. I'll have security throw you out, I said, as if not deigning to be sullied by a fight. Mario laughed, and Marie did, too. Then I had to laugh, because Mario was the security when he was not breaking chains across his powerful chest, or to the thrill of the kids lifting the minivan with the clowns still in it. Our laughing killed the black electricity and left us silent and pouting, until Marie said, Look, you two, give me a time to change, and we'll all go down to Romero's. And then, as if in an afterthought, she tagged along with, As long as Eddie joins us. There was a familiar, soft swooshing and brushing at the door. I looked out the window and saw what I had expected to see. The baby elephant. I went out. But I left the door open so I can keep an eye on Mario while talking with the baby. He wanted to know if we were all going to go out to dinner. His mother had sent him to ask, he said, how those elephants get wind of things, I'll never know, but they do. They knew I loved Marie without my ever saying a word. Tell mother, I said, tell her that the plans are up in the air, that's nothing quite decided yet. She'll want to know when they are, he said. I could see from the way his ears flapped that he was embarrassed that he had been sent to run his mother's errands. Of course, I said, tell your mom and dad. They'll be the first to know of any plans. I had meant that because I admired the elephants and their solid life. Who hasn't ever dreamed of being one of them? I was in trouble now because I could not go to dinner without the old couple. They always left the baby behind. And if I invited the elephants to come along, then I would have to ask the lions. That would be very bad business. No restaurant welcomed them. Even Romero's was touchy about serving them for fear they could not be trusted. Who knows what might get into a lion's head? Just a shrill laugh or the rattle of silver on a plate might set them off to pounce and devour the diner instead of the steaks before them. Worse, if the lions came, then the dancing snakes had to come or they would go into a coma just before performance time. Just lie there in their glass homes pretending to be asleep or sick, lie coiled about each other like a weave of thick rubber hoses. Then they go on hunger strike, and if you dumped a host of mice and rats into their glass box, they would not stir. People liked the dancing snakes, liked them because they danced. They were a big attraction, and I dared not shunt them off because of a dinner. I heard a slap, a sharp slap, and turned. Mario came out of the trailer with a goofy grin. The door slammed behind him. Are you happy now? I asked. She touched me. That's more than what you get, he said, stroking his cheek as if to keep the sting of that slap from fading away. We started walking. They were pulling down the tents and wetting the straw on the ground. The floodlights made the moon pale. The fortune teller was still at her booth peddling her $5 palm readings. Hasta luego, Mario said. I'm going back to my trailer. I'll walk along with you, I said, thinking he might double back to Marie. He began to protest. Just then I thought I saw Eddie slip under the fortune teller's stall and realized that all this talk of going to dinner was nothing without him. So I said, fine, but don't let me catch you going back there till you know where. Boo-hoo, he said, I'm really afraid. He had his hand on his cheek when he turned to leave. The fortune teller had on her most enticing gypsy costume. Her blouse was pulled down off the shoulders and her skin was coated with a waxy glow that passed for youth. She did not like me or Marie. So there was no problem of having to invite her to dinner, and I did not care at all if she knew about it. I did not like her either, but she raked in the money and the circus got 35% from the pile. That paid for a week of the lion's meat with a little change left over. Good night, I asked, wanting to open with something of interest to us both. Chicken feed, she said, looking under the counter as she spoke. I noticed that a giant golden hoop clip-on was missing from her left ear. She always wore the pair for good luck when she worked. "Lose something?" I said. "Nothing I can't replace." "Let's cut to the chase, Marlene," I said. "Didn't I see Eddie slide in here?" "Did you?" A falsetto voice came from under the counter. The midget crawled out with an earring in his teeth. "Look what I found," he said with a salacious grin. Marlene blushed under her thick rouge. He was still in his assistant ringmaster's costume, with top hat and white gloves and black whip taller than himself. I had the outfit custom made for him on a layover in Kansas City, where I had just made him my sidekick in the ring and when he was still full of gratitude. "We're going to dinner and Marie wants you to come," I said. "He can't because he's chowing down with me," Marlene said, lifting him up on her lap. I thought he might find that humiliating, but he gave her a big kiss on the cheek. "Who else is coming?" he asked. "The whole crew, the snakes and their minders, maybe the lions, and Mario, of course. Tell Marie I'm busy tonight, and anyways, she should have asked me instead. She should have asked me instead of sending you." "It's just a friendly night," I said. "Everyone's invited. You too, Marlene." "Oh, a friendly night." Then with his teeth slowly pulling the other ring from the fortune teller's ear, he added, "Unless she has a better offer, I have another kind of night in mind. Tell her that, why don't you?" Well, I asked, feeling the weight off my chest, glad that he would not be anywhere near her, but also worried that without him, Marie would not come to dinner. I went to the elephant's hold and found them milling around, except for Sam, who was sleeping on his feet with his one eye open, his trunk drooping with dignity. The baby, his haunches on a bale of hay, yawned, had nothing to say, but his mother came up close to me and in a consoling voice said, "Louis, it's okay, whatever happens about dinner. I don't care much for Romero's anyway." "We'll find another place next time we're in town," I said. "Why don't you bring a sandwich over here, Louis, and we can watch you eat so you won't be all alone." "Thanks, Mother," I said, and I left. I was on my way to see Marie and tell her that I had looked everywhere, but that I could not find Eddie. I also wanted to tell her with words what she and the elephants had already known. The moon was black against the floodlights. Mario's trailer loomed ahead like a loaf of darkness with a little square of light. I went up to the open square very quietly and watched him slick his hair back with oil whose perfume came through the window like a wind of violets. He combed and recombed and patted down his hair to a wet, shiny helmet. He sang. He was his own guitar. His voice came from a gypsy cave in Granada, a cave lit by stars and two candles. He sang about love and its miseries and the joys of those miseries. He sang about unrequited love whose remedy was death, but he boasted that his love was even stronger than death and his steely grip. Then he wrapped a chain tightly about his chest and expanded himself, his muscles bursting, his face a red furnace, until at last the chain snapped, one link following the other. That's the story. Thank you. Thank you very much.